The Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, most of us just call it HIPAA, was a really big deal when it passed back in 1996, and among its landmark effects was a new standard for protecting personal health information from being disclosed without a patient's knowledge. It put a lot of new restrictions in place on what healthcare providers and insurance companies could do with our data and whom they could share it with. Fast forward 26 years and consider what other kinds of companies might know the intimate details of your health. The search engine you used to Google your symptoms when you felt sick, the smartwatch that tracks your heart rate and exercise habits, the phone app you use to keep track of menstrual cycles. This is all potentially very sensitive data in the hands of entities with no legal obligation to treat it that way. From KERA in Dallas, this is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. There's a surprising amount of bipartisan agreement that it's time for significant new privacy legislation. A proposed measure called the American Data Privacy and Protection Act could enact some long overdue safeguards. But as my guest will explain, there's been significant resistance to this from California lawmakers who worry that a less stringent federal law would undermine their state privacy law's higher standards. Journalist Matt Laszlo is a contributor at Wired, where you can find his article, The Shaky Future of a Post-Roe Federal Privacy Law. Matt, welcome to Think.
Thanks for having me.
Will you start us out with just the broad outlines of the American Data Privacy and Protection Act?
Well, if you don't mind, I'll even take us further back. Congress has been debating these issues for about more than a decade now, and they've done nothing. So it's really been the wild, wild west for Silicon Valley firms, these, you know, $1 billion or multi-billion-dollar, trillion-dollar firms. And so they've had no rules of the road, and they've really been using that to their advantage, which I think we're all starting to realize. So Congress is, for the first time, getting more serious about tackling these issues and just really putting minimal constraints on them. And the bills, they get fairly technical on Capitol Hill. But the crux is it comes down to how much Congress is going to allow these companies to sell our private data and how much we're going to actually be able to review that. Over on the other side of the pond in Europe, they have a model that's an opt-in model, where here in the US, we opt out. So, you know, on your iPhone or whatever, it now pops up and says, hey, do you want to allow this app to track you? Well, that's new, but that's us. We can opt into that. That's more like the European model, which really puts users in the driver's seat and says, your data is your data. Right now in America, it's the complete opposite of that. We don't really have control of our data because the rules of the road, again, allow Silicon Valley firms to do whatever they want with that. And so Congress is attempting to rein that in. And I'll let you go from there. Sorry, that was a little meandering.
No, it was perfect. I mean, this law would not be just about health stuff, but how have the gaps in HIPAA privacy protections come to light in the wake of the Supreme Court's ruling ending federal protection of abortion rights?
HIPAA does not protect this information. That's what a congressman told me point blank. And I think that's why our eyes are finally getting open to what has been the rules of the road or the lack thereof for so long. Because now when it comes down to young girls, young females, especially ones who can be prosecuted, lawmakers are scrambling to try to protect this data. And now that they're looking at laws like HIPAA, those guidelines didn't really deal with anything in the digital space. And so now some studies that were conducted show that the most popular women health apps, 61% of them rely on geolocators. So 61% of the most popular 23 women's health apps follow your location if you're that user. And that's not HIPAA protected, even though that's your private information that you might not want your doctor sharing. And when you communicate with your doctor in an online portal, well, turns out that might not be protected. And the fact that we're even saying might shows the problem. When you're talking to very serious lawmakers and then very serious experts and finding out that there's disagreement on even what HIPAA covers in this new digital era that we've been in for some time now, it's just kind of astounding. I'm used to Congress dragging their feet, members of both parties, but it seems like this time they're really dragging a lot of us along with them.
And it also seems like health providers might want these new protections as well.
It honestly depends on the provider. Yes, many of them want that. They want to now be able to market that, especially to females, and say, hey, we can protect your data. But others, especially if it's electronic apps, and now seeing, Amazon get into the healthcare space. And yeah, seeing these insurance companies or whatever become more digitized themselves, that really upends things because it blurs the lines between who's a healthcare company and who's a tech firm. And all of these firms, based upon the current rules of the road, they make money. They also, their whole formulas are based on the data they're getting or collecting from our gadgets. And we have to remember, these firms, when they collect it, they're then selling it. So we might trust, say you trust Facebook with your data. Well, do you trust who Facebook sells your data to? Because that's kind of how the internet as we know it has been built. Think of it as a pyramid. And it's really fortified, and its foundation is ads. And a lot of these companies don't even have a ton of ads. What they are doing is selling our data to second and third parties who we may never even know what those entities do. So yes, it's good, and we are seeing more providers try to offer new products to protect women and this information. But a lot of that information has already been sold, and the current model means that information is currently being sold.
Some people in states like Texas that have all but outlawed abortion have expressed fears that their data could be used to prosecute them for seeking a pregnancy termination out of state. Is this something lawmakers in anti-abortion states are actually talking about?
So there's no monolithic voice these days.
Right.
I think you know very well. So yes, there are some voices on the extremes who are calling for that. Most don't want it, but honestly, we just saw it a few months back in that tragic case of that 10-year-old rape victim in Ohio who went to Indiana to seek reproductive health care to get an abortion. And remember, it became this big cable news spitting contest where you had Indiana officials seemingly more concerned about how it was leaked than they were about this poor young victim. And so, yeah, you're already seeing people tracked, people prosecuted, and that's the thing. It really comes up to that prosecutor, in that region, in that state. So that's where a lot of fear comes from, because it might just be the whim of that one elected official. Maybe they need to score some points with their perceived base, in the lead up to an election. And that's what really terrifies people, is that women's health, can now be politicized, or is now politicized in a way that very personal to people, and something we haven't really seen in, yeah, we haven't seen it in the decades since Roe became just kind of codified into our DNA as Americans.
Well, Matt, if the impetus for enhanced federal privacy laws is in part, in fact, about protection for people who might cross state lines to end a pregnancy in an abortion-friendly state, how has it happened that there is a fair amount of bipartisan support for new legislation?
Well, that's kind of the interesting thing, with this debate. At some point on that sphere that we call the continuum of, ideological continuum, the far right and the far left meet. And on this one, it comes down to, the basic right to privacy. And so this would actually be an interesting one to, press Texas Senator Ted Cruz on, who enjoys talking to me because I always press him on constitutional issues. It was actually at CPAC one year. He called out the Congressional Press Corps and said, "Oh, they're not serious. Congressional reporters just ask, all these pop questions." So once he got back to the Capitol after that speech, I go right up to Mr. Ted Cruz and I ask him about, article or the Second Amendment, let's say. And I had a very specific and precise question for him. And so now Ted Cruz loves me, because I always come to him with just straight constitutional questions. And so this one would actually be an interesting one to see him wrestle with, because Senator Josh Hawley, whose name is out there, he's a Missouri Republican, his name's out there as a potential presidential contender in 2024. He's definitely, far right conservative, definitely pro Trump, but he's really worried about losing the right to privacy, as well. And so he's a prosecutor. One thing he says is a lot of prosecutors don't like encrypted apps. Prosecutors want to have evidence, so they can win their cases. But him as a prosecutor, he says, no. As much as I want evidence to build a strong case, and I believe he was Attorney General of Missouri before he came to the Senate, he says protecting our data, ensuring that there is a right to privacy for all Americans, no matter the issue, is just essential. And giving us all, that layer of protection over our data is something a lot of Republicans really want to fight, because remember, they don't want their gun purchases tracked.
So, Matt, possibly a staunch conservative like Josh Hawley could see a constitutional defense of enhanced privacy laws. On the other hand, the impetus for this article, I think, was that there is pushback on this from Democrats in the California delegation because California already has its own state-level privacy law. What is in the California Consumer Privacy Act?
Well, so that law, like much of what California does, whether it's with car emissions, even same-sex marriage, and even marijuana drug policy, they've really led on all these issues. And when it comes to privacy laws or the lack thereof here in America, California has what advocates call the gold standard. Just passed it a few years back, and it really attempts to put, us users in the driver's seat. It enables us to request and actually see what data I keep saying we. I have nothing to do with California. I'm a Midwestern boy who's been in DC 16 years. But that law really protects Californians, and it allows them to see where their data is being sold. And then it also attempts to put them in the driver's seat and give them more power to sue these companies if they break that trust. You know, we've had all these hacks where our personal information has been leaked, or we find out that our information is being sold to spots that we never intended, shall I say, to have our data. And so that's what that law is really revolutionary. And it's a little bit ironic or just interesting because California is the home to Silicon Valley. And so they've really kind of stepped up to their own home state industry on behalf of their citizens. And so now getting congressional leaders to, well, let me say it this way. Speaker Nancy Pelosi's from California. And what she's saying, along with other California lawmakers, is the California standard should not be superseded by any new national standard. They don't want to weaken that California law. Well, that's what complicates it, because that California law goes way further than all these Silicon Valley firms that are spending tens of millions of dollars lobbying, both locally and federally now. They are just dead opposed to that law. And actually, some say the reason they came to the table this time around and are pushing for some moderate or are willing to accept some moderate federal privacy standard is because they do and they are pushing for that, or they do want and they are pushing for that to supersede and trump that California law, which is kind of an interesting story to watch play out. Silicon Valley hates that law. So it's kind of brought them to the table here in Washington. People are skeptical of them for a very good reason, you know, wondering whether they're trying to tank it, whether they're just trying to kill and gut that California law. And then again, California really leads the way. So I think a lot of other states are really studying that California law and may soon adopt it. So this is a high stakes game right now because your data is worth a lot of money.
So here's what I don't get, Matt, and I am no kind of expert in the minutiae of how legislation gets done, but as you mentioned already, California has stricter standards than the federal for a lot of things, for example, auto emissions. Why would a weaker federal law, would that somehow diminish California's right to have stronger standards within the state?
Well, you raise a really good point. And so, yes, the California standard does not necessarily become the federal standard. But on this, what Silicon Valley lobbyists, many of whom used to work for party leaders in both parties across Capitol Hill, they've got money, so they've got the big dogs. Well, they want the federal one to explicitly trump the California one. And so that's where this is new this time. On other in other areas, you know, whether cannabis policy, you know, there was never a vote on legalizing marijuana federally after California allowed medicinal marijuana, I believe, back in 1996. So there was no real tension there. Other states slowly legalized or decriminalized. But now, with Congress really looking and trying to adopt this federal standard, what advocates say is Silicon Valley lobbyists are trying to just tank the whole process, sitting at the table just so they can precisely scalpel out the portions of that California law that they really hate just for California, Because what that means is their apps and their contracts, you know, those long things that we all click on without ever reading. Well, they have to have a completely different standard or contract with Californians, millions of Californians, than they do with the rest of the nation. And so that's where having uniform federal standard would really be in their best interest, though possibly not in our best interest as the consumers.
My guest is Wired contributor Matt Laszlo. We're talking about his article, The Shaky Future of a Post-Roe Federal Privacy Law. I guess, Matt, the nightmare scenario for these tech companies would be a patchwork of 50 different sets of privacy laws around the country. Are there a lot of other states that have their own privacy protections?
Yeah, it's become en vogue, let's say, in recent years. And potentially not even just because, well, we've really awoken to all this stuff. You know, I teach, I'm a professor at some schools. I teach on new media's impact on government at Johns Hopkins. Well, I have a quaint little book on my shelf next to me called The First Social Media President, and it's on Barack Obama. Well, if you go back to Obama and his use of social media, it pales in comparison to not even how former President Trump used it, but just to the different apps, the speed, the different social platforms that we have now. So looking at what the internet was and wasn't 5, 10 years ago, it feels like only in the past 3 to 5 years that Congress really got woken up to these issues, in part because they're hearing from their constituents, also in part because they were seeing how they were impacted. And with conservatives, they say, hey, look, we've been deplatformed. You know, our First Amendment rights are under assault by these tech firms, so we need to rein them in. Democrats want it done for different issues. But with those contours, you've had attorney generals across the U.S. really looking, for one, at Silicon Valley to see how fast and loose they are playing. Then they look at the federal statutes and then their state statutes, and they realize a lot's lacking when they actually want to take legal action against these firms. This gets a little nerdy, but it's tech, so you got to. There's this provision called Section 230, which was passed and adapted, I believe, in 96, but in the infancy of the internet. And it was passed to shield all these companies from frivolous lawsuits, but also, what if Kanye West or Yee, you know, tweets out something anti-Semitic, as he allegedly did recently. Well, do we blame Twitter for that? No, in part because this Section 230 shields companies like Twitter from the content posted on them. They are almost viewed as publishers, but almost public publishers. Because they're just not tied. And so if people put out conspiracies and YouTube videos or whatever, you can't sue YouTube. Now, that's where lawmakers are looking at changing that, because many, especially conservatives, say Silicon Valley is just too protected by this. And they're singling out conservatives, et cetera, et cetera. And so that is where these state attorney generals have looked into it. And then when they don't have the tools they need, they're then telling the governor and the legislators, hey, can you pass this? I need one more tool in my toolbox.
This was really interesting to me, Matt. What did you learn about the age divide among lawmakers of both parties in Congress and the differences between what older and younger representatives seem to want?
Well, that's the thing. The day Roe was upended, all these, veteran House lawmakers marched from the steps of the Capitol to the steps of the Supreme Court. That day, many of them fired off physical letters to cabinet officials, and different agencies. They were using all of these very old tools, and many of them even were telling me, yeah, I need to research this. And so they were asking questions, almost some for the first time. Whereas these younger lawmakers, one of them who isn't even on the Energy and Commerce Committee in the House, which is the one that passed a broadly bipartisan version of one of these privacy bills, she's not even on the committee, but she crafted her own bill called My Body, My Data. Because the bills that were going through dealing with these privacy laws, these were all crafted and really debated before we knew that Roe was going to be upended by the Dobbs case. And so it is a little bit shocking to see Democratic leaders still without a plan. Right now, all they're saying is vote, 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 vote us in. Their pitch to voters is put us back in power and then we'll let you know what we're going to do about
Well, they
this.
essentially say they will figure something out on abortion. Is that right?
Yeah. And it probably involves them, if they get 51 in the Senate, blowing up the filibuster to do this. That seems like their only option. And so seeing them caught so flat-footed, where these younger members were already aware of this, just because they were almost raised with a phone in their hand, some of these younger lawmakers. And so it's interesting seeing that age divide, because it's also Congress, an institution run on seniority. And so with that, even what the morning Dobbs was overturned, there was three or four senior female lawmakers who that morning, and there are some of Pelosi's closest allies, trusted lieutenants. They were looking at polling data nationwide, specifically on Roe, which was interesting because the younger members started by crafting legislation. They started looking at polling data. It just doesn't. And some of them, they sent out inquiries and stuff like that, kind of alerting these women's health companies, these health tracking apps, alerting them that, hey, we're watching. But they sent out a list of a lot of questions. And if you think about it, it's kind of astounding that Congress hadn't thought about this stuff previously, because for what? For the Daily Beast, for years, I covered former Congressman Steve King from Iowa, who literally laid out his blueprint for getting Roe v. Wade tossed out by a conservative court. He laid out that blueprint to me 3, 4 years ago, and then I watched it unfold, and Democrats are now surprised and planless. So it has been interesting watching to see them scrambling. And so, yeah, there's a lot of people thumbing through a lot of books and statute codes trying to figure out what is right now. Because before they could even adopt new legislation solving a problem, they're still trying to figure out what the problem is. And that's a little unsettling.
Quickly before we go to break, how do providers of technology like period tracker apps and temperature apps and that sort of thing, how do they try to assure their users of privacy protections?
Each one is different. And I think that's what federal lawmakers want, to provide, especially women, just with more uniformity so that you all don't have to read all that fine print. Now, My lawyer friends tell me we all should read that fine print, just as an asterisk, but none of us really do. And so that's where lawmakers want to proactively and even preemptively get out in front of these companies, so that they don't have as much freedom to do with our data with whatever they want.
Matt, what are the arguments for and against separating out reproductive privacy laws, as in the My Body, My Data Act, from a law that would safeguard other personal data that might be collected and used by tech companies?
Well, part of it becomes a little bit of political strategy. As I've raised these questions, with lawmakers across the aisle, Democrats get mad at me because they're like, why are you alerting Republicans that there's a reproductive angle to the privacy debate? They're like, don't give up our the cards we're holding.
Oh, so Democrats are hoping not to talk about that portion of it, so Republicans will continue to support the measure.
Some of them, the cunning ones. And so, as much as possible, many Democrats are downplaying the reproductive ramifications of the new privacy law. But then you also have some of the more progressive members who are sitting there, standing on their desk, waving flags, saying, this is an emergency. We cannot wait another day to pass this. And there's many Democrats who would gladly have not recessed ahead of the election to tackle this issue. But the politics of the day wins out. And so Congress is campaigning instead of doing what we pay them to do, which is legislating. And so it'll be interesting to see if reproductive health and abortion gets fully inserted into the privacy debate on Capitol Hill, because then I can imagine numerous scenarios where all the work, the bipartisan work that's been done, just completely unravels. Because in today's hyper-partisan political climate, neither party wants to give the other party a win. And just like we've seen restraints on how federal funding can be used, for decades under what was known as the Dickey Amendment, which prohibited federal dollars from going towards abortion or reproductive health. That was passed annually by both Democrats and Republicans. President Joe Biden voted for that for more than 3 decades when he was in the Senate. And so it'll be interesting to see if Republicans do try to handicap it in some way and prevent data sharing. Because, as you asked earlier, yes, in some states, police officers want this information so that they can prosecute people going across state lines or now getting abortion pills sent to them, or even new networks are popping up where people, progressives it seems, or even nurses and doctors are going to be delivering abortion pills across state lines. So in this new post-Roe world, which is very new and full of many unknowns, I think there's just a lot of mystery out there. But because this issue is so politicized, and because both parties really kind of have drawn their line in the sand on it, on the right, if you believe that babies are being murdered, then you kind of have to handicap it and not allow that in one way, And then if you're on the left and you don't think this is an innate right females have, and also a constitutional right, then there's not going to be give on that. And so again, as this percolates and becomes more a part of the privacy debate, yeah, it's really at risk of being derailed because, again, Silicon Valley never really wanted it to get off the ground anyway. So you have these competing pressures. So it's really one to watch.
I mean, I don't want to get too wonky here, but there are some really fascinating jurisdictional questions. If you just take this this scenario, which is hypothetical at this point, that prosecutors in an anti-abortion state might want to press charges against someone who left that state and went elsewhere to receive an abortion. Abortion services are legal in a state like California. The laws that govern abortion in Texas are not explicitly written to say no woman residing in Texas who gets pregnant there can have an abortion full stop. They don't have, no state has the right to say that, do they? The law is not being broken in Texas if the procedure were to be carried out in California.
I was just going to say, pardon me, ma'am, but no state has done that yet. I think we're in new territory. It's being floated, or I've heard that idea floated in some states. Again, I think they've come up to that constitutional wall that you just laid out there. So we're going to really see the limits, or this is going to be tested and tested. And because it's such red meat to the base on the right, and also because for some lawmakers, this is what their faith tells them. Again, if they believe that babies are being slaughtered, they're gonna do what we saw Lindsey Graham do, the Republican senator from South Carolina, who seems to have angered Mitch McConnell, the Senate leader, as well as Rick Scott, who's trying to spearhead a successful win for Senate Republicans this session. They did not want, party leaders, even though Rick Scott supports it personally, he's a Florida senator, he did not want it as a political issue. So when Senator Lindsey Graham introduced a federal ban, which, like the privacy bill, if there's a federal ban on abortion, which some Republicans are pushing, well, that would answer a lot of these questions. And many people and millions of women say that would negatively answer a lot of these questions. And so it'll, oh, but pardon me, and but we're going to see so many of these states, conservative ones, and I've covered Texas politics for years. Actually, I was formerly a contributor to KERA. And yeah, we're going to see some very cunning lawmakers and very intelligent lawmakers really test the bounds of the Constitution. And then, especially if you're on the right, you see the Supreme Court is sympathetic for these issues. So states are going to go as far as they can. Yeah, I just see a lot of question marks in the future.
Distinct from what happens with this legislation that we're talking about today, Senator Kirsten Gillibrand has called for the creation of a data protection agency. What kinds of things might fall under the purview of a new federal department like that?
Well, and this is one of those interesting ones because Ms. Gillibrand, who listeners might remember, was one of what, 200 Democrats who ran for president? There's a lot fewer than
Sure felt
that,
like that,
but
yeah.
she was one of many Democrats who ran for president last go around. But she's teamed up with one of the many Republicans who ran in 2016, Senator Lindsey Graham. Again, listeners might know him. He's Republican, conservative firebrand, who's fighting for that national abortion ban. But when it comes to privacy issues, he's aligned with Kirsten Gillibrand, even though she's fighting for the same thing, kind of purely for abortion, or that's the top of her list right now. But what she sees, well, for one, she says Congress has proven that they're derelict, you know, on these issues. Congress lacks the knowledge when it comes to tech and Silicon Valley, and Congress is hyper-partisan. So what she envisions, and along with Senator Lindsey Graham, is that federal bureau to kind of take the politics out of it, if that's even possible these days. But yeah, it would almost be like a what the Consumer Protection Bureau is supposed to be. And I think the main thing that they're signaling is, hey, all the statutes that we have, they have nothing to do with tech and you know, this new digital world. So they're saying we have to update our statutes because we're way behind. But also, we don't want to, as Congress, codify something ignorantly or based on politics. Let's have this review board, you know, dispassionately study these issues and be a, you know, a national buffer between politics and these apps that we all basically now rely on.
Where, Matt, do you find the greatest overlap at the moment between Democrats and Republicans in terms of the specific privacy areas they agree they want to see enshrined in law?
So there's not unanimity, but it kind of feels like the most bipartisan agreement comes around that wonky principle I brought up earlier, the Section 230. I think all these politicians look at Silicon Valley, whether you're a conservative saying, oh, they're censoring our freedom of speech by deplatforming us or whatever. Or if you're a progressive like Bernie Sanders and, you know, you want some redress in court for these issues. And so that's where right now they're shielded. They're Section 230 makes it so these tech firms are kind of seen as publishing houses. So, you know, it gives them separation from what I or what you might say, yell, or scream into Twitter or other social media apps. Or even better example, we've seen these horrific mass shootings here in America and then also abroad, live cast on whether it's Twitch, YouTube, or even Facebook Live. So that's where more progressives really want to be able to come after these companies and say, hey, you allowed that, you know, you can't do that, and punish them. Right now, they're completely shielded from anything, any punishment, any fines. They've changed their ways a little bit because Congress has gotten louder and because local attorney generals across the U.S. have gotten on their cases more. And so that one's interesting because you also have some powerful voices in the Democratic Party and in the Republican Party who fiercely oppose changing that. So even though my sense is that you have the largest block of bipartisan agreement on overhauling that so that these platforms can be sued or be held accountable for the content that is presented on their platforms, which many people see these platforms now as public utilities, which is another debate Congress is kind of having in the midst of all this. And so it's interesting because the powerful Democrats and Republicans who oppose upending the internet as we know it with Section 230, they're going to be in that huge brawl with the younger members. So again, this is just one to watch play out. And we all got to read the fine print in the meantime.
Journalist Matt Laszlo is a contributor at Wired, where you can find the shaky future of a post-Roe federal privacy law. Matt, this has been really interesting. Thanks for making time for us.
Thanks for having me.
You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, or you can search for our podcast by searching for KERA Think wherever you get your podcast and subscribe for free. Again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.